We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary, see your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Like I said, you might be less cynical. What is up, everybody, and welcome into the Keeping It 1000 podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. I'm your host, Adam Mattes, and I'm joined by the Hall of Famer, George Karl, soon-to-be Hall of Famer, George Karl. Coach, congratulations.
Thank you, Adam. It was a good week last week. A very good week in many, many ways, but yeah. I got the call. I got to go to Vegas. Go to New Orleans. Got to go see Carolina beat Duke. A lot of good stuff happened, and then of course the honor and meeting the class.
Yeah,
being around Dale Harris and a few other Coach Williams was there. It was really done really well. I think Jerry Colangelo has done a great job with the combination of USA Basketball and the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I think Colangelo has expanded his legacy a little bit in sport.
Right.
And I think in a very positive way.
Right. Take me back to it then. So I know you said you might find out a little bit before. Just who was with you? What was it like to get the call? Who's the one telling you? How did it go?
Well, they tell you that you should receive a call on Monday or Tuesday the week before.
Okay.
The Final Four, and I think I received mine very early. I think on Monday morning, I actually missed the call somehow on my phone, but I called him back real quick, and he gave me the. And the gentleman was announcing it to us was the CEO of Naismith Hall
of Fame.
I don't know his last name. I think his first name's John something.
Okay. Who was with you for this? Were you? I mean, you weren't home alone, were you?
I was home alone. Yeah. My dogs. But you know, and then we had to arrange the trip to New Orleans,
right. Yeah.
Which was not the easiest thing in the world. But we got down there, and they give you a ring, they give you a sport coat, they had a couple jerseys, they had some memorabilia to sign. And then you met the class, you know, the class of 22. And, you know, Del Harris is in that class. Bobby Huggins is in that class. Three women basketball coaches, I think, are pretty cool that are in that class. Manu and Timmy Hardaway are in the class. Swim Cash is in the and Swim actually grew up in Pittsburgh.
Oh, really?
Connection. She lives about 10 minutes from my hometown, and so it was fun getting to know her a little bit.
Yeah. Where did it rank for you amongst, you know, your career accomplishments and awards and just moments? I mean, is this number one? I mean, it's kind of a culminating capstone to it all.
Well, the one thing I recall or the recollection I have is, you know, my whole dream is always to win the NBA championship.
Right.
And I failed in that conquest. And there have been many days after seasons when we lose that, you know, you spend some mind space on, you know, what is a really good goal. And for most of my career, I've always been somewhat content if I was delivering a product of excellence,
right?
A product of improvement, a product of getting a little better every year by year. And to be honest with you, I think I got into a satisfaction of if I did that, in my mind. You know, you're never going to be able to meet the expectations of the fan base and of management. You got to have a realistic fan base for yourself, and I think I've had that. But I think getting in the Hall of Fame is above winning an NBA title, in a way.
Yeah.
If you had to ask me, I'd probably want both. If I had to have one and not the other, being a lifer, I probably think the Hall of Fame is a little bit above.
That's the thing for you, is that your basketball, your relationship to basketball weaves with North Carolina, obviously one of the all-time college teams. It weaves to the ABA. It weaves to the NBA as a, you know, player and coach. It weaves to each conference. It just weaves in and out of so many different parts of it. So I honestly could understand, you could have said either one, you know, championship, Hall of Fame, how you weigh them. But I think one of the interesting things about you and your career is you've been along for the ride of the NBA for a majority of it. Honestly, more than 75 right. years. How many years was it that you've been in some capacity, even just tangentially related?
About half that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty incredible.
And the other thing is, when I go back to Carolina, my name is not, my number is not retired. And my name, you know, my team isn't hanging in the rafters in Chapel Hill, but not my name.
Right.
And they do have a banner for Naismith Hall of Famers.
Oh, really? So there you go.
So I get to hang. And
when will that go up?
I don't know.
yeah.
I whispered that to Roy, and he didn't tell me anything, but I'm hoping it goes up.
That's pretty exciting, man. That's pretty cool. And speaking of Carolina, huge weekend for them as well. You kind of got the double whammy. Almost pulled off the national title, too, which maybe would have been the full cherry. But beating Duke in the Final Four, just kind of walk me through that one for you.
Well, what's funny, I saw Roy the night before the game, and he was really confident.
Really?
I wasn't that confident. But I thought, you know, in big games like that, the underdog, which I think Carolina was still the underdog.
Yeah, they were.
If they can show that they're equal or better than, the game, the pressure of the game falls on the team that's supposed to win the game. And I thought that's what happened. Love didn't play great for the whole game, but, you know, in the end of the game, he was really good.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I thought Huber did a great job of cutting his rotation, playing about a six-man rotation.
Yeah, it's all he plays. Man, he doesn't play anybody.
And
it worked. Yeah.
And it takes courage to do that.
Yeah, it does.
It takes courage. A young coach doesn't usually have that courage.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a great job there.
Yeah.
Of just saying, hey. And when you shorten the rotation, you can be more demanding of those guys.
Yeah.
You can tell them, okay, you're gonna play as many minutes as you can play.
Right.
But now you gotta do what I want to. So I think I don't know when he settled in on that, but it wasn't until I think maybe January or February where he went to a smaller rotation.
Yeah. It might have cost him, too, in the title game, because I do think that was part of the story is they're only, as you mentioned, really five guys they trust, but six guys they really trust, and eventually they ended up giving up that big lead, and I think it might have just been, like, you keep going deeper and deeper. These guys are playing more and more minutes against tougher and tougher competitions, and they just didn't quite have the horses, but it was a good national title game. It was a good Final Four. It was really a good tournament all the way through. I mean, the March Madness delivered, I thought, this year.
Well, I thought it was really interesting not really having a favorite. I mean, I know.
Right.
I mean, I don't think anyone could have predicted the number of upsets in, you know, St. Peter's. Where the hell did that come from? And And, you know, Carolina got benefited a little bit. They got in a bracket that gave them some maybe easier games.
Mm.
But I don't, you know, the parity of the NBA, the NCAA this year, I thought was really, I think a Final Four with it. You could have listed maybe 12 guys that could have won that championship.
Yeah, yeah. That is part of what makes it so fun. I think there's parity this year. We've been talking, George and I, when we chat before and after these shows, I hate the NBA. But I also love the NBA. I have a love-hate relationship with it where it's a lot of extremes. But one of the things about this year is I actually think it is an interesting year in that there is a lot of parity to me. I could name – I mean, there's the favorites. Let's don't kid ourselves. Like the Bucks, the Suns, you know, there's teams that I think are better than the rest. But there's a lot of parity. There's just a lot of – and I like that. And I think there's a lot of experimentation this year. I actually think there's a lot of teams that are trying things that are very weird and different and probably things that will catch on – with other teams for years to come. So we're in this interesting point. You kind of feel differently. You almost seem a little down on the NBA right now and in this year in particular.
Well, the word you use that I want to jump all over is experimentation.
Yeah.
I mean, there is tremendously more experimentation going on in an NBA season now than ever before. Because of that, I think we have a lot of bad basketball games. I think we have a lot of games that, you know, if you're watching, you're looking at it and saying, this game's over. I mean, it might be 15, it might be 10, it might be, but this, I mean, this game's over. And I got that feeling too much this year.
Mm.
I just got too many games where, you know, Charlotte isn't playing this guy and that guy, and they're playing Boston, and I'm going, well, Boston can sleepwalk
right,
and win this game.
They're a really good team, though. They're one of very few. But there are – I just think, like, Toronto is an interesting team. Some of the stuff they did – I thought Chicago, before they got injured, was an interesting team. I honestly think the Nuggets – I just did a big article on Jokic, which people, by the way, members can check out on thednvr.com. A bunch of clips I've been compiling over the last couple of weeks on Jokic and some of the things that he's doing differently this year. I think Jokic was really interesting this year. He's always been versatile and this or that, but he's added things to his game out of necessity this year. They put him in – point guard roles even more so than they have in years past, just because I think out of necessity they've had to do it. But to me, this year I just think it's been interesting, and maybe experimentation, it's funny, maybe when a new style first arrives on the scene, maybe it is sloppy, but it's one of those things where I look at how has Toronto been able to defend an offensive rebound the way that they have without a true big. It's interesting. Has it been sloppy? Maybe. But I think other teams are going to learn from that as you go forward. And that's part what I get excited about as I go, they're unlocking something everyone's going to start to steal from.
Well, I think the big man is the guy that's losing the influence in the game. And, I mean, Scottie Barnes was a unique pick.
Yeah.
But I think it's proven to be a damn good pick.
I love him. I love his game.
And he's a young kid that hasn't even evolved like he's going to evolve. And
he's really young. I think he's 20 or 19.
I mean, he's growing up right in front of us right now. And the playoffs, I think, will be him.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll have a dominating performance, but I bet you he has one or two good performances.
I agree. I want to get into everybody. I get this question all the time. Andre Iguodala became sort of an enemy to Nuggets fans. People really didn't like him. And here's the stories I've heard, and I want to hear it from your perspective. I've heard, you know, that series, 2013, of course, Nuggets, Warriors, 6-3. Nuggets were the 3 at that one. Lost Gallo, so there, you know, that going on. And the Warriors hadn't fully broken out. Steph Curry hadn't fully broken out as a superstar. Still kind of, this was the series that kind of made it happen. But that Andre Iguodala was maybe unwilling to really get physical with Steph Curry, which, by the way, here we are a decade later. That's kind of the book on Steph Curry. You can't let him. You have to make it physical for him. You can't let him get full head of speed off of these. You have to get into him. You have to get physical. Maybe he wasn't so willing to do that. You know, hanging out with the guys in between games. You know, even though we're in the middle of a series, he's kind of buddy there, and maybe, just maybe, wasn't totally dialed into that series to help Denver give a chance. What's your perspective on that series and that aspect of it in particular?
I think his actions in that series were difficult for some of the players and some of the coaches to tolerate. I think he was messing with the game a little bit. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. I have no proof other than I think he had a close connection with Mark Jackson and maybe a few other guys on the team. And with knowing Draymond now, but we didn't know him then.
Right.
I could see Draymond putting an arm around Iguodala and maybe going to dinner with Iguodala. I can see that.
Buttering him up a little.
You know, and but the thing that doesn't match up, Iguodala played well in that series.
Right.
He played very well, and I could never question his play. I think he was doing what we were asking him to do. He never seemed unreachable or uncoachable at all. But his actions at time were very detrimental, I think, to the energy of our locker room.
What was the energy of the locker room in that series?
Well, I don't know if I ever told the story, I guess. We thought we lost the game when David Lee went down.
Right.
And we were banged
really?
Up.
Really?
We were banged up.
Yeah.
But our whole scouting purpose in going into that series was we're going to make David Lee beat us.
He was a really good offensive player.
Not good, but not a three-point shooter.
Right.
A good offensive player, but we felt our rotations could get to him to where we could at least get a sensible read on how we're going to win or try to win and lose the game. And I think Lee gets hurt in the first game.
It was early.
I know it's just the first half. And we win from game one. And as the game goes on, it seems like Golden State's going, it looks like they're going to be with us. And then when we know in game two, they come out and they play fast. They play really fast. Game one was, I think, under 100-point game. And game two was like 120-point game. And as a coaching staff, we realized that they, by putting Harrison Barnes in the game, they were as athletic or more athletic than we were.
Right.
And so our option as a coaching staff was to go maybe play a power game and go inside more. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't think we were any good at that. Something we never did all year long.
Right.
And I didn't want to make that drastic of a personality change in our team.
Right.
And I still think that was a damn good series. And whatever Ty Lawson was, I don't think Ty was 100%.
Right.
I thought he played damn well for what his physical abilities were. And people forget that Fareed missed, I think, two games, maybe one, maybe.
I can't remember, but yeah, he missed.
He missed a couple
the
games.
The first one, yeah.
First games. And Fareed gave us those extra possessions and those extra points that I know are taking out in a playoff game in some form. But a wild card in getting a great offensive rebounding game wins playoff series too. So I thought it was a combination of a lot of crazy stuff. Yeah. Motivated, and then of course the firing that came later was even funny, even more funny. No?
It was an abrupt end to an era for sure. For an era. By the way, I should have mentioned when we were talking about the Hall of Fame thing, the Nuggets did send out a nice tweet, which I was very excited to see, kind of a congratulations. And I hope, my hope is that sometime in the near future, there'll be some kind of ceremony at Ball Arena. Hopefully next season. When is the Hall of Fame? It's July, isn't it?
September 10th.
September. So it's before the season. So my hope is that some point the Nuggets organization and Denver as a city will be able to get together and sort of celebrate that. Maybe it's 2023, maybe a decade night, you know, to remember the Coach of the Year season and the record-setting season. Should I not hold my breath? What do you think?
Give me the betting odds on that one.
I could get really good value right now if I place that bet. But you know what? Who knows? We're gonna try anyway. Let's get into this series. We're going to spend some time here talking about this one coming up. Nuggets Warriors. First of all, the Nuggets, by the end of the year, I just thought what Jokic did over the last couple weeks of the season, He was great all year. I thought he played some of his best games over the last, I don't know, 7, 8 or so. I think he went to a whole new level just in terms of he started playing playoff gear, you know, where he's great all year, pushed it into, hey, I know they need even a little bit more to get the wins. I mean, kind of, what did you think of him down the stretch?
Well, I'm not even going to give you 7 games. I think his last 25 games. I mean, wasn't he getting like 5 to 10 triple doubles?
Got a lot.
Every month. And I saw what he was doing. Offensively, he was taking more responsibility for the game in the last 6 or 7. I think that's what you're talking about. But my feeling is someone else is going to have to help him win some games.
Yeah.
We can't expect Jokic to win all 4.
Right.
And I think the asset is, I think Denver's going to have the best player on the court.
Yeah.
A lot of the series.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think Golden State has more players that can have a winning playoff game, especially with Klay back, Draymond back, all the guys that we know are stars. Steph, when he plays, if he's going to play. I don't know when he'll play, but he's going to play. So they have more of a team concept of how to win 4 games. As we're right now, I think Jokic can win 2, maybe 2.5.
Really?
I don't.
Even that's tough.
Great players don't win 4 games.
I know. You really?
There's got to be another win or another win and a half in right. there that comes from something else.
Right.
And I don't think anybody, after watching this team play all year, unless Murray would come back and play at a high, high level, we don't know who that guy's going to be.
And by the way,
I know Aaron Gordon played well down the stretch, but you know, to be honest with you, Aaron Gordon, I think, is defendable if he's going to be a priority in the game report. Right.
If he's like the number 2 guy, you could probably stop him. If he's the number 4 guy, you know, you have too many other things you're thinking about, he's going to slip through the cracks.
And sometimes the way you win another game is sometimes guy gives you a hell of a half, and then another guy gives you another hell of a half.
Right. Yep.
But understand that the home winning one of the first 2 games is what history says you got to do.
Right.
You got to do that.
They got to get a split in Golden State.
You got to get a split. Now, can it be done down 2-0? Yeah. But history says this series isn't going to be won by going down 2-0.
I think it's compounded by the fact that Steph Curry has been out of the lineup for so long. And here's the crazy thing. Draymond, Steph, and Klay Thompson, 11 minutes together this year. They haven't played together. I think there's reason to believe they're going to be better in games 5, 6, and 7 than they are going to be in game 1. Yes, they have years of playing together, but it's been a long time. And you probably, if you have a hobbled Steph and you have a team that hasn't played together all season, the early games, you know, you have a chance there because they haven't quite got their chemistry, as well as the doubt. So to me, I do think game 1's extremely important. But to your point, the split, to me, I'll go ahead and say I think it's a must. I think you have to split in those first 2 games to get it done.
I think if we don't split, it could be a short series.
Yeah. Michael Malone today. By the way, the status has remained the same on Jamal Murray. He was at practice today. He had a headband on. He had some sweat going. I mean, he participated in parts of the practice today, but it didn't sound like a lot. As with everything with Jamal Murray, we're all reading the tea leaves and getting these reports from here or there. What I will say is that it was said he participated in parts of practice today. But when Jokic was asked about how much, you know, what he noticed from Jamal, he said, I'm only focused on the things that we're doing. So I didn't really notice Jamal, which makes me think Jamal wasn't involved in the things Jokic was doing, which tells me he's probably not practicing with the team in a meaningful capacity. So take that for what you will. That's my interpretation of all of the veiled reports that come out of the Nuggets.
Well, tell me why everybody's doing this.
Why doesn't people?
Why is everybody playing the game with injuries?
Were you this way? Or did you just come out? You would come out and say, hey, so-and-so, they're not ready. They're not playing for a while.
I mean,
is this true?
I never was hiding anything. But Denver's not the only team.
It's everybody. Telling you. You said you weren't hiding anything. Everybody's hiding everything.
Right.
And why? I don't understand it. Yeah.
Why? Is there an advantage that we're gaining that the talent of all coaching staffs are prepared for 10 different things that could happen. We over-prepare for the playoffs. Yeah.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
They're not that complicated. You think the very scenario, but it really is like
I mean, Denver's offense isn't complicated. Now when Jamal comes back, it becomes better. But I'm not sure they're going to throw in five new plays when Jamal comes back.
Right. I think that public relations, and I'm not talking about Nuggets, I'm talking about general NBA sports public relations, have swung too far in the other direction. In an effort to protect, like, what are people saying online, and what are the reporters saying, and this or that? We gotta squash this story. And I think they've done it so much that now it's created a new way of talking and reporting on the game that hurts.
What it looks like? It looks like our politicians in Washington D.C. lying to us,
and just not saying
and laughing as they do it. And I don't think it's a good look at all. I think it's slimy. It's slippery. It's like dishonest right in front of us.
I don't think, with regards to Jamal Murray, because I agree with you. I mean, there's something about it that, again, I don't come from a reporter's background. So I come into this and I'm observing it, and my thoughts are always like, is this really the way it's done? That we just never give an update on a player like Jamal, a meaningful update. I think, though, everybody kind of knows now, one of the reasons there hasn't been a definitive update is because I don't think anybody knows. I think a lot of this rests on the shoulders of the player, in this case, Jamal, and a lot of it is just on the, you'll know when you're ready. Let us know, are you ready? Are you ready today? No. Okay. Do you think you'll be ready next week? I don't know. So I think that's why the reports are so slow to trickle out, and they're so ambiguous, as it's a lot of, hey, Michael Malone today said that he would be called doubtful for the series. Jamal would be doubtful for the series, but that he is not ruled out. He's not closing the door on a potential of him to return. I take him at face value for that specific thing. I think it is unlikely that he plays, obviously, on Saturday, but at any point in the series, but not completely impossible. And I know that's frustrating for fans, but that's my read on where we are here. Personally, bringing a player like Jamal back, in not in game one, but in a different game, is that, can you do that? Can you bring your second best player back from a year off in the middle of a series?
I think you can bring him back in game three. You know, I could see a strategy of seeing how we do in game one and two. Give them another, 3, 4, 5 days?
I think it's actually almost a week. They play on Friday of next week, so.
Yeah, and they always like to stretch out the first couple games. Yeah. So I could see that. And then playing at home would be, there's an adrenaline there that could be powerful and helpful.
Right.
I think announcing it to the fans would make it definitely a sellout. And I don't know if I would expect it to be a sellout, but sometimes those first round games have a little more difficult selling out.
Yeah,
so I'm looking at
game three is the last game.
If he plays and he's not going to play game one, there's a little strategy to game three.
Okay, what about, so after that? Would you just say, all right, we're starting to get into the late part of the series? I mean, unless you're up 3-0 somehow, maybe you bring him back in a game four. But
I mean, I think you can. I'm looking at Jamal as a bench player, as a fire plug off, a spurt off the bench guy. I think Malone's done that all year long at a very, different personalities, different type of players. I think he's done that really well this year for him. So, yeah. I don't think he's going to play 35 minutes. I think he's going to be on the limit.
Oh, of course, yeah.
A minute limitation, probably in the vicinity of 20.
Maybe he plays 5, 10, 6 minutes in the first quarter, and then the second, you see our second, first half, and then second half, maybe you bring him back, and if he plays 10, 11 minutes, and at the close, he played so well, maybe you feel gives you a bump, then you close another 4 or 5 minutes, gets up to 15,
exactly.
16, but that's kind of it. Why don't we hit a break? I think it's doubtful. I just take Malone on his word at this one. I think it's possible but doubtful. That's just how I would categorize it.
What about Michael Porter?
I think he is way more doubtful.
2 months ago, I thought he was ready to play.
He was. Had a setback. I know of at least one setback that he faced that sort of stunted everything. But seeing him today, he was also at practice, not participating even in the end of practice scrum. You know, everybody bring it in. He was getting some treatment and this or that. And just again, we're reading tea leaves here, but I just don't think he looked very healthy to me. He looked to me like somebody that was not on the cusp of coming back, which is very different from what I saw 4 weeks ago when I watched him work out and thought, this guy's ready to go. But so something, I don't know what. Team won't say anything, but something happened. Let's hit a break. On the other side, we're going to continue to get into the series, including the Jokic versus Draymond battle, which Michael Malone today said he expects to be both teams' closing lineup. Draymond at the five, Jokic at the five. We'll talk about what the strategy is there. But first, our presenting and only sponsor for this show is DraftKings Sportsbook. The NBA playoffs mean next-level basketball. I believe that. It does mean next level. I watched the play-in games last night. I thought that was a level up from what we'd seen. I loved it. Get ready for all the action by betting on the play-in. There's still 3 days of play-in left. On DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, new customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets instantly. You clinch a win no matter what. All DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also bet on NBA hoops with same-game parlays, where you combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. Plus, each day of the play-in, you get a risk-free bet up to $10 if you use the same-game parlay if it doesn't hit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use promo code DNVR. Bet $5 to win that $150 in free bets. That's promo code DNVR. Don't forget that part. Very important. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Did you watch the play-ins last night?
Yes, I did.
I loved them. I thought they were great, especially that second one. I thought that second one, the skill level, the execution, whatever, but the intensity and just sort of the will of all four teams that competed, I thought was fantastic.
The first game I thought was kind of, I thought Brooklyn had a way of letting them back in the game, which they do quite frequently to play them. They play with the game a little bit.
They're one of the worst defenses I've ever. They're always. They could be up 20. I still feel like the game's not over.
Well, that's another thing about today's game. I mean, how many 25-point leads are we blowing in the NBA these days? So, no, I thought the second game was big time. It was a young team in Minnesota, you know, showing a lot of immaturity at times. And Beverly is a weird cat, but a good player to have on your team.
You've got to love him.
And in a lot of ways, he won that game for him. In a lot of
ways. I mean, for sure he did.
Yeah. And to get the big guy have a bad game and get, you know, foul out, it looked like the game was going to go Clippers. And I thought the courage of Edwards showed. I thought the point guard played really well. And the celebration afterward was a joke, though. I mean, that was...
You thought?
That was way too much.
Oh, man, no fun George is here. No fun George. What's going on? Hey, this is a team that's made the playoffs once in 20 years.
That's true. Okay.
Once in 20 years. Because I'm with you in that. I laughed out loud when he took his jersey off and threw it in the crowd.
Beverly
when he jumped
was
up.
A little out of control.
Oh, he was out of control. Completely out of control. But here's
And then Charles and Kenny.
They clowned him. They played the We Are the Champions. But you know, here's the thing. I felt two things at once. One, happy for them. I don't think we celebrate sports enough. It's always championship or bust. And look, championship is the ultimate goal. We talked about that earlier. Like, it should be. But I'm not one of these guys that thinks you can't celebrate little victories around the way. I think you can celebrate every little step. This is a team that needed to make it over the hump, was at risk of not making it over the hump, and their whole season kind of feeling like a failure. And instead, they achieved their goal of making the playoffs. Celebrate. Go crazy. And at the same time, guys like you and me, guys like the TNT crew, they can kind of have a laugh about how ridiculous it was at the same time. I think both things are fine.
And then Charles picking the win, beat Memphis.
I mean, come on, man. Come on. I'm excited for that series, but come on. I don't know. I thought it was a great moment. And the thing when I was watching the game last night, it was a reminder that, hey, playoffs are different. You're watching the intensity of that. And we just saw Minnesota in a game that we all said was going to be playoff atmosphere. And it was, you know, it was an intense game, Nuggets, Timberwolves. But that play-in game was a whole other level up, I thought, in terms of just the tension that both teams were playing with. And it reminds you, oh, yeah, there's a lot of tension in playoffs. And some guys are ready for it and step up for it, and some guys don't. I thought Karl-Anthony Towns, you're right, he had a bad game, but I also thought he got rattled. And that was really what happened, is he was rattled in that game.
He played a very immature game with fouls. The foul trouble was like, wow, come on, man, you're acting like a rookie.
Official gave him two chances at that fifth foul. He gets one offensive foul, the ref lets it go. Then he gets another one, and the ref's like, hey, what am I supposed to do? I'm trying to help.
Yeah, there's no question they knew that he had five.
They definitely knew he had. They let him earn it. All right, back to the series with the Nuggets. Today, Michael Malone said he expects that the – I asked, how much do you think they'll play Draymond at the five? I mean, Draymond's been a great small ball five, death lineup. This is how Golden State's won championships. Jokic is different. He punishes guys when they try to play – there's a lot of small ball bigs that Jokic dominates. Can Jokic dominate Draymond Green in a way that takes away their best punch, which is Draymond at the five, or do you think Draymond is going to render Jokic – on the other end of the court, meaning now Jokic's going to have to run around chasing everybody around. Where do you see the advantage in that specific matchup?
Well, I got a counter to your thought. I think Jokic can dominate, yes. But can you win with him dominating? Can you win with him touching the ball all the time and not letting the flow and rhythm of the game happen? I don't want to give the flow and rhythm of the game to Golden State. So I think I want him to dominate, but still play like he's doing, you know, being the point guard on the team.
Right.
And I think you need him to have a good facilitating game as much as a dominating basketball game. Because we got to find that extra guy. We got to find that Aaron Gordon game, or we got to find that, you know, three-point shoot, a game where we shoot better than they do,
right?
Type of game. And I know that's kind of crazy to say, but if Steph doesn't play, I think Denver can shoot with him.
Mm.
I wouldn't recommend trying to win the game that way.
Right.
But I think Steph makes them over the top as a much better shooting team than we are. So I think, you know, you got to find flow. You got to find rhythm to your offense. And if we go down to the low block all the time, that is a, for a better phrase, anti-flow basketball.
It also allows the defense to sit a little. Even if you're cutting through, the defense still gets a little bit of a relax just because you have to throw it in, you have to clear the side, you have to do things that allow them to relax. But I think one of the things about the Nuggets is they've gone away from that post-game this year, especially to our point over the last 25 games, really since mid-January. They've been using Jokic more and more, even against an advantage, a size advantage. They've used him more and more at the elbow or as the ball handler or even as a cutter running into the ball.
A roller to the basket. I think he's gotten better at that. That becomes your quarterback with an advantage.
Right. And
the great thing about Jokic is he's a great passer, but he knows advantages and he makes it look easy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. What about the other end? I think the Warriors are going to put especially when Draymond's the center. I just think they're going to put him in every pick and roll they can and try to make him guard 2-3 per possession. And I wonder what that effect that is going to have on Jokic's fatigue level, because they know the Nuggets need him so much on offense. If you make him run all over the place on defense, that takes something away there.
Well, I don't know the matchups as much. I haven't studied the X and O's of it. I don't know if Jokic has to play Draymond, though. Is there a guy we can put him on?
Well, Kevon Looney will be the starter. He's right. Their center. But I just think they're going to go to the small lineup
right. A
lot. And then at that point, you're talking about Andrew Wiggins. I don't think so. Klay Thompson, I don't think so. Jordan Poole, I don't think so. And obviously Steph Curry. So I don't know if you can hide him.
You might be able to take the pulse of the game, the guy that's not engaged in the game, rather than making that decision now. But they're, you know, they have a lot of offense, good players. I don't think they're going to go after Jokic and go away from Steph. I don't think they're going to go after Jokic and go away from their A and B game. They might go after Jokic if they have to get to C, but I would try to keep Jokic off of Draymond as much as possible until the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I do think Jokic can have a monster series in this one. I mean, I just think he can have some really good numbers. But to your point, one player wins you maybe two games in a series, not three or four, and so we'll see. So who are some of the other guys that are X factors for Denver to you that you look at and say they have to play better than what we expect them to do?
Well, I go to the veteran guys first. Aaron Gordon, probably Rivers. I think Rivers.
Rivers is a good one.
Rivers could give you a wild card. He could give you a wild card. I think performance both offensively and defensively. I know we're all hoping for Bones, but I'm not sure of that one.
Do you think he has a bad series? Warriors are a smart team. You got to be smart. You got to be locked in mentally to guard them.
I mean, I think, you know, you got to be thinking a little bit on Monte Morris, a guy that's had a good year, but it's just a different intensity to the preparation. You're not going to have this free-flowing game. Every play, every circumstance is somewhat scripted,
yeah,
and somewhat controlled. And the one thing I do think is, I've always felt confident that Denver could win this series. And the reason I felt that over the last couple of months is Golden State has lost its defensive identity.
You think?
I really do. Now, Iguodala hasn't played a lot. Now he's back. Draymond hasn't played a lot. Now he's back. So maybe I'm missing it. But, even in the last couple of games, Golden State has not played.
Last couple, for sure. I think they are the number two defense overall. And to your point, Draymond is such a big part. I mean, them without Draymond, they're not a great defensive team. Them with Draymond, though, he's one of the best defensive players I've ever watched. He's on a short list for me.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But it's his basketball IQ as much as his defensive physicality.
Oh, for sure.
You know, he knows what you're doing. He knows what you're trying to do, and he tries to mess it up.
Yeah.
But my confidence is I think we can score against him.
Interesting. To me, that'll be such a big part of this because I don't think Denver can stop them very much, even if they play the best defense of the year. I think Golden State is still going to get free. That's what they do. You almost have to be psychologically resilient because they're going to make tough shots that you force them to take, and that's just who they are. You can't break. You can't go away from who you are there. I want to go back, Austin Rivers. So Denver's starting lineup is Monte Morris, Will Barton, Jeff Green, Aaron Gordon, and Jokic.
Right.
Is there a chance they go away from that starting lineup at some point in this and maybe try to put an Austin Rivers on the court to give them an extra defender on their scores?
I would probably say no because the guy that I think has to sit down is Will Barton, and I don't think Malone. I think Malone has a lot of respect for Barton, and he's kind of catered to his desire to be a starter, and to take him out of that now in a playoff series, I think would be
could create.
I think you're just going to see Rivers in the game pretty quick, and Rivers' minutes are going to be spent on Thompson and or Curry.
Yeah.
And I think probably more on Curry than Thompson.
Yeah.
And I think Barton, can he give you a wild card game? Yeah. I think Barton has nights where he's making his shots. I don't know if he can give you a whole game, but I think he can give you halves.
Do you think it's more offensive for him or it's more about the defensive guarding Clay or whoever it is he gets assigned to?
I think to win this series, you got to be a good at both ends of the court.
Yeah.
You cannot be just an offensive team. You got to be both. You got to have some defensive instincts that help you win basketball games.
Yeah. Bones Highland, we'll just go back to him real quick. If you're coaching him, how do you approach this? Rookie had a good year, but now it's to your point. It's going to be different now. How do you prepare him for this?
I mean, Malone has more courage than I have. I mean, I thought everybody said I don't play rookies. I don't play crazy rookies. This guy's kind of crazy.
Bones is kind of crazy?
Well, he's a little wild.
A little wild.
I think from the script I see, he trusts Bones, and he's going to play.
Right.
I don't know if he's going to play big minutes, but I think he's going to give him, a stretch in the first half. In a stretch in the second half to have an impact on the game.
Right. And can that have a bad effect on a rookie if it's usually you play 7 minutes, but tonight you had a bad 2 minute stretch, you're yanked. I mean, is that, or is that just, hey, we have that conversation before we go in. Don't take it personal. This is the playoffs. Right. You'll have another chance, but just know.
Well, I think you do that with your top 7 or 8 guys. I don't think you need to do that with guys that are only playing 10 minutes. But, you know, both Jeff Green and JaMychal Green, can they give you a... I mean, it's a puzzle. It's going to have to be put together by what is going on in the game at that moment. And that game doesn't mean it's going to be the same as the next game. Yeah. It's going to change. It's going to move around. Yeah. And I think Malone has got to be ready for it.
Yeah. DeMarcus Cousins in this series, I mean, backup centers. Usually the NBA, as you get to the playoffs, you play fewer and fewer bigs. Golden State especially doesn't have a lot of depth at their front court, you know. So I'm wondering, what role does he play in this one? Jokic, you're going to play him, and we got to win that battle to size. But DeMarcus Cousins, does he have to beat their small ball lineup, or are you more worried about him getting exposed defensively?
I'm worried about the three ball. And so with DeMarcus on the court, the two things that DeMarcus can fall asleep at is transition defense and picking up the three ball. So I worry a little bit in that area, but DeMarcus can give you a three ball too. So I think he's going to play similar minutes that he's been playing most of the year. And you have the insurance that if Jokic does get into foul trouble somewhere along the way, you can expand his minutes with some confidence.
Right. Just what's your feeling going into the series? What's your prediction?
Steph? I kind of been disappointed with the radio stations in town kind of saying that Denver has no chance. I kind of feel Denver should kind of be favored.
What? You think they should be favored?
Well, let's look at the last 25 games of the year. I mean, who's the better team?
I mean, they were without Steph for those games, though. I mean, that's a big deal.
And Steph had this great history when he comes back from injuries and he plays really well.
Well, that's the hope. That's the real difference maker is if he's not fully healthy.
Steph, I think his ankle, right?
Yeah, it's ankle.
And I'm going, that affects his shooter.
For sure it affects his shooter.
And I'm a guy that moves all over the place. It affects his shooting. I'm okay with saying that it should be a very close series. And I would rather pick the winner after game 2 or 3.
Sure.
But the home court is a value that the first two games – Golden State's going to have to protect. If they protect, I think they're in a good place. If they lose one, I think it's going to be a real good series.
So what is your – do you have just a – I know you can change it. We're going to do this again, I'm sure, here very shortly. But
I think Golden State in 6 or 7.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I want to pick Denver in 6.
Denver in 6. Yeah. Nuggets in 6. Well, there you go. I'm leaning more towards Warriors in 6, but I reserve the right. I have 48 hours to really finalize my film study on this one and feel Jordan Poole to me is a huge X factor. I'm very curious to see if he has a good series or not.
He's going to have a good one and he's going to have a bad one.
Well, he might have both.
And I want you to know, Poole hurt them a little bit in the second half of the season trying to be a superstar.
Really? Try to be a little too much.
You got a little outside the box of what Golden State usually does.
It's that thing that to be a confident volume shooter, you have to always be ready to shoot. But always when you pull the trigger is different when you have Steph and Clay and everybody healthy than when you don't. And it's difficult, I think, as a player mentally to know like how much do I turn the dial to be ready to shoot. So that'll be interesting. Let's bounce around the NBA real quick because I just want to ask you here. Some of these other ones. First of all, Clippers. You got tonight New Orleans, San Antonio. Do you have a sense of who you think will win that matchup?
I think New Orleans has more talent, and I think San Antonio has better preparation. I'm rooting for San Antonio.
Okay. Then the Clippers. Either of those teams have a shot against the Clippers?
I don't think so.
So Clippers are probably the 8.
Paul George has played some really – he didn't play great last night. But I thought I saw a different Paul George the last couple games of this season. I thought he was passing it better.
Yeah.
Not forcing it. Last night he went back to that volume game. I think Paul George, if he can be a playmaker, a little more of a triple-double guy, I think L.A. Clippers wins that one.
So if you have Suns-Clippers, is this even a matchup? I mean, Suns are really good.
I think it's a matchup. I think Clippers can get a game, maybe two.
Okay.
But Phoenix, I think, is focused on a mission a little bit.
They're the real deal, and they definitely have that look.
They're the one team
that
looks they have a face of a champion right now.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good way to put it. Memphis, Minnesota? You scoffed at the idea Charles would pick Minnesota?
Well, I think Memphis is really good, so Minnesota grew up a little bit last night, but it was just a little bit. I mean, it's not even close to what they're going to meet. And Minnesota has, to me, other than the Denver games, I don't think they've played very well on the road.
Right, right.
They played pretty well here.
Yeah, they got up for it.
The last couple games, they played really well here.
Hey, Memphis is tougher. A lot. I think if you think about last night, Pat Bev was tough. Anthony Edwards made some tough shots, you know, that showed some of this, maybe, you know, resolve, mental resolve or what have you. But I don't know the rest of that team is tough the way that, I mean, I'm pretty sure Karl-Anthony Towns is not. And they're going to have to be tough to beat Memphis because Memphis is tough. To me, that's a mentally tough team. They're young, but they're not afraid to swing at every chance.
Memphis is cocky and confident. And the 20, whatever the record is, 22-2 without Ja.
Yeah. Something like that.
That's pretty damn impressive.
Pretty good.
That's pretty damn impressive.
Utah and Dallas, and now we know Luka has this calf injury. He might not even play in game one. If he does, it might be very limited. So that changes this series quite a bit. What way do you lean?
I'm leaning Utah on that just because of the injury and just there's an energy to Luka that damn good player. Don't get me wrong, but his energy this year, to me, has been a little bit negative.
Entitled, maybe?
Yeah, that's a good word. I like that word.
He's an interesting one because he's so good. I mean, he did, of course, get the 15 technicals. He actually got 16, but one of them they rescinded, so he almost got suspended a game. I can see it. Do you like these ball dominant? I mean, Jokic has kind of become ball dominant, to be honest with you, maybe even more than I like, albeit out of necessity this year, I think. But Dallas is one of those teams that has everything they do is through him, and it makes it so that if you have a calf strain, does the team know who they are without him in a way that they might have to find out on the fly here against Utah?
Well, I think the trade they made was a very good trade. I think Dinwiddie has given them another guy that can create. They have Brunson, Dinwiddie, and Doncic. So they have enough guys that can create when Doncic is now not playing. I like Dallas the second half of the season, but if Luka is as hurt as they're kind of making it out like he's might not even play in game two, then I think Utah responds in a positive way and goes out and gets it.
Interesting. I don't know about – Utah's the one I just don't know about. I just don't buy that team.
They're good, but they're not great.
Boston and Brooklyn.
I'm rooting for Boston.
You're rooting for them, but how do you feel like it'll go?
I think Boston wins that series.
I think Boston wins in five.
I think Marcus Smart is going to be the – I mean, I think Marcus is going to get after Kyrie, and Kyrie's – then the crazy of Kyrie might come out.
Right. When he's good, he's as fun to me as any player in the NBA. Just because I love – like, I know what he is as, like, a decision maker or this or that. I just love his footwork. I love the technical aspect of the game and how he does it. To me, I'm just – I appreciate it just so much. And I know it's not all of basketball. It's just a portion of it. But he's mastered that part, and I love it.
Yeah, last night was pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. I mean, the wide variety of moves he used, the wide variety of shots he took, and then he made
but
a
who
12.
Who was covering him?
I know. Look. Of course.
I mean, there was not a man.
George.
There wasn't a mean guy on the Cleveland team.
George, I've played basketball, though, for 100,000 hours in my life. And I can't do that in an empty gym, what he did. So that's why you're right that there weren't great defenders on him. But I just still have this appreciation for how do you make some of the off-balance shots he does. And he makes it look so easy. And I just I watch him and I go, I know how hard that is to do. I appreciate that.
I actually think he's gotten more fundamental.
He's so fundamentally sound.
His off balance stuff, he's gotten under control a little bit better.
He's never off balance. His balance is supreme. Right. It's incredible. Milwaukee, Chicago.
Why did Chicago fall down?
Well, they lost their player. Yeah, yeah, Lonzo Ball is such a good player. Caruso is such a good defender. Lonzo to me was the connector. He connected that team, right, offense and defense.
I think Chicago might scare him a little bit, but I think Milwaukee gets it done. And Milwaukee, if they're smart, they'll get it done quick.
I think that is a four-game series. I think that one might be the biggest sweep in the playoffs. Last one for you, Philadelphia-Toronto. I love this one. It's my favorite series of the first round, outside of Denver, of course.
I don't trust Philadelphia.
Me neither.
I don't trust them. So I'm going Toronto.
Me too. We're both taking the upset here, Toronto. I think this will be a very frustrating series for the Philadelphia.
My son is mad at me right now.
Oh, no. That's right. You're going against the program here. Miami is going to play Atlanta or Charlotte or Cleveland. Do any of those teams have a chance against Miami?
Not to win the series, but Atlanta, I think, could go and maybe make some noise because of what they did last year. someone's going to have to cover Trae Young. Trae Young's legit. He has a great influence on the game. He's got to be covered. He's got to be considered, that guy that can dominate a series. But I think Miami will find that guy.
Do you like Trae as a player?
No.
Yeah, what is it you don't like about him? He's ball dominant, too. I mean, the ball's always in his hands.
I think it just goes back to my roots of guys like that guy should have to earn that opportunity. And he still doesn't earn it. Ruth, his defensive effort is average at best.
You have to always cover for him, not just because he's so small, but the effort as well. Yeah.
Well, he's getting better with the effort, but it's still, I want more team orientation, more balanced orientation.
Last one is some people don't, I think Jokic's the back-to-back MVP. We've seen a lot of the votes have already come in. He's has a huge lead of people that have made their ballots public. So I think he's going to win in a landslide. What does it mean, in your opinion, for him? You said he could be a top 10 player of all time. Nobody's saying that. You're the only guy saying that right now. But I think when you become a two-time MVP, all of a sudden when you start to say, hey, is he going to be a top 20? Like, what's it going to take for him to be considered?
It's not on Jokic now. It's on the Denver Nuggets.
They got to win.
They got to win a championship.
Yeah.
To be top 10, he's going to win a championship.
Yeah. But what else does it mean that he's a two-time? Well, it just doesn't happen very often. It's rare. The number of two-time MVPs are better. A very, very low number of players.
I'm just marveling at how easy he makes a hard game look. I mean, that's the one that I go, he looks like he doesn't even play hard sometimes. And it's a simple game. It's not complicated. It's got more athletic and skill to it than people think it does. But
sure.
I think the game is a joy to him. He enjoys playing it. He's damn good at it, and he's getting better at it.
Yeah.
What a wonderful story we have here in Denver.
I know. That's great. That's good stuff, guys. That wraps it up for this week. Nuggets obviously in action on Saturday. We're going to be back with a regular DNVR Nuggets show. And also check out all of the great stuff George Karl is doing at Truth Plus Media. Anything in the pipeline right now that you want to promote? Anything specific?
I don't know if Brett is we have a football one coming up.
Yeah?
On the Broncos.
On the Broncos.
Yeah, with Ryan Harris.
What's it called?
Don't
we'll have to keep it out. We'll keep it out. I'm sure we'll retweet it.
I think it's
it.
Coming soon.
Okay.
It might, yeah. I don't know when, but it's going to be with Ryan Harris, and I think it's going to be really good.
Awesome. And then hit that like button on the way out. Don't forget, this is also a podcast. So if you ever miss this as a live show, don't worry. You can always catch it. Keeping it 1000 podcast with Adam and George Karl. Have a good one, everybody.